Welcome to the Talking Socialism Show. My name is John Case, and the program you're about to hear features Kathy Kunkel, Democratic candidate for the 2nd West Virginia Congressional District, and Matthew Hahn, a Republican candidate for Congress in the 2nd West Virginia Congressional District, both running against Alex Mooney, never to be seen except or heard except in the sucking up to Trump. Anyway, it's a very interesting discussion this morning of both a Republican and Democratic candidate who have joined forces in some ways to try and speak with a united voice addressing the needs of the state of West Virginia. Anyway, coming right up here. Okay, boom. I think it's all connected now. We're live on YouTube as well as my radio station here. But no. I found out it's really easy to do that as long as you don't... they don't like you to use copyrighted material. But other than that, you know, they're pretty good. It's an amazing platform. Both all these Facebook now and... I mean, they've been doing it for a long time. But everybody's getting into it. Looks like Zoom's going to have a lot of competition here.
I guess they were so. Well positioned for a pandemic. It turns out.
Well, I mean, it was a weird thing. The guy that started it, I think, was working for Cisco, which has WebEx, right? I think that's the platform that they use, right? And And I used to use that. We used to use that way back, you know, when I was retired from Microsoft and. You know, we did all of our meetings pretty much either on Skype or WebEx. Or there was an internal platform that Microsoft had called Communicator. And actually, if you get Skype for Business, that's what you're getting. You're not getting the original Skype product. Which I found out inadvertently on the radio here because I was using the regular Skype product that Microsoft bought, right, for a long time because it was free. And in the beginning, it had all the great features that Skype had when they bought Skype, which was like you could connect on demand. Like I could run. I didn't have to run buy $1,500 for a regular radio telephone system, all right? Because you could just use Skype, right? And you could be online. Your call could come in, and they could just join the conversation on the fly. Well, I mean, clearly Microsoft. They liked those features, but they decided to take them out of the free version and put them in the the business version, right? Which they were now marketing, which was really the old Communicator product. And it took me a long time to figure out why all of us, you know, every time they did a Microsoft update on my machines, Skype would come back with one less feature. It was it was perplexing for a while, but. You know, when Zoom came along, it just it solved the whole problem. So it's much better. I find that on radio, you can't have more than two or three people talking, or nobody can recognize who's talking. People get confused about voices, right? If you have too many. But I mean, if you have very contrasted voices, it's okay. But even when I was doing the show at WSHC for years, that we. You know, we always had, when we'd get two or three people calling in and, you know, folks would tell me who were listening, right, that I couldn't tell who was saying what, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, good morning, JB.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes.
Yeah, I had to update.
Oh, you had to update. Oh, that's right. Zoom is, they've had, they made everybody update because they're encrypting the...
make sure the Chinese can hear us real well.
I don't think the Chinese are the problem. You know,
Hey, you know, our government is melting down right before our eyes.
The states and the Fed all together.
The Fed, it's unbelievable. Did you see that last night with Biden?
No.
No. What did he do?
He was on late last night with. Lawrence O'Donnell, and also had Stacey Abrams.
Right.
I'll take Stacey Abrams any day.
She's pretty good, yeah.
I'm not kidding. She would make a much better president than Biden.
Well, she's not going to be the nominee, so.
Biden's not looking too good to me.
Well, he's got to be looking better. He's the only
alternative. Well, I mean, he doesn't even look healthy, and he's not believable. You know, he looks right into the camera and lies.
What did he lie about?
He lied about that intern or whatever the lady in the office.
He might have, but how do we know that?
You could just tell from looking at him.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty obvious.
Well, I didn't see it, so, okay.
Yeah, you got to check it out.
Well, I'm going to vote for him and campaign for him. I don't care what you're right at this point because
no, me too, but I'm worried about what other people think. I'm going to vote for him. I'd vote for a donkey. I'd vote for a dog. You know, instead of Trump. My God. But that's the other problem is Trump is just totally melting down.
Yeah.
He's calling for an investigation of Obama.
Sure.
What? I mean,
anything to
yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah,
right. I mean, this is worse than I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
This is way bad. And I'm glad you haven't seen it, Kathy, because it would discourage you. I mean, why anybody would want to get involved in this?
You got to get involved, you know? I mean, it's patriotism, man. You got to save your country.
Yeah. And now he's exporting the immigrants back to their country, complete with infections of the virus.
Well, at this point, considering the welcome some people are getting in this country, they might be running back to their...
Right, they're probably happy to go back.
They might be. I don't know. Well, it depends on where, but, you know. So, anyway, but I think Mike's going to join us here in a minute. But we got 8 minutes, so I'm going to...
Hey, we got free testing in Berkeley County.
That's what I hear. I saw the notice this morning, yeah.
Yeah, right. Where's after the happening? Show, I'm driving over there.
Oh, you are?
Excuse me?
I just said, where are they doing that?
Uh-oh. That must be me.
That's okay. Hello? You're
going to have to move.
Yeah, your bandwidth is compromised. You're
yeah.
Like a vulnerable you're like
I'm going to move over.
You have a vulnerable computer immune move. System, you know, but all right.
Yeah, that's me. I've got Frontier for my Wi-Fi, which is very suspect.
But if you get close to the modem, it's better?
Yeah, for some reason.
That might be something in your walls.
Physical distance.
You know, could be. I mean, usually the modem signal goes 1,500 feet, you know, so supposed to. So, Kathy, are you... one of the first things I'm going to ask you is that how is campaigning in the COVID environment? Okay, that's going to be an important. I'm so curious to hear how you're thinking about that. I've been listening.
Well, it's challenging.
And I've been talking. I listened to Sammy Brown's video cast. She does pretty frequently, I'm talking to her. She's about trying to get comfortable with using that medium and how do you reach enough people? You know, it just gets, and we end up relying upon social media to do a lot of advertising. So,
yeah.
It's and that's, you know, people's attitudes toward social media is kind of interesting. I mean, we use it more and more, but I'm not sure we trust it more and more. That's maybe an element. So.
But we trust what our friends say, which is true, whether we're seeing it in person or on social media. So, you know, to the extent you can get like real people talking about the campaign on social media.
I find it's hard to get into I find that civility, shreds pretty fast, you know, when there's some even minor disagreements sometimes, it seems. But
yeah.
There's Willie.
Oh, look, who's that,
aww,
man?
That's Willie.
Willie, huh? Oh, okay, he's waving. Yeah, right.
He's kind of bummed out about the whole Trump thing.
Is he?
Yeah. He tells me every morning he's crying to get out. He wants to be outside.
Was he? Did he? Did you tell him that something about his food that confused him about
food.
Trump or something like that?
Here he goes.
My cat usually is... It's all about food.
Yeah. Yeah, so we get free testing without any doctor's orders or anything.
Right.
I wonder how long the line's going to be.
Well, if you're going to go down, you'll find out. When you let me know.
Well, I should be there right now. But
I think you're like me. I mean, right? And Carol, my wife, you know, where we think we had it or may have had it, you know, in the beginning of the whole thing. It was a really bad cold, but it, you know, I didn't have much of a fever. And so when I called up the doctor, well, if you don't, unless you've been to China back then, but unless you've been to China, unless you've got a fever, unless you got all these other, you know, then no. And I think you would have to go to, they didn't have any tests anyway across the road here in Harpers Ferry at that time. Maybe they do now. But so maybe we had it, right? And they and then there's a lot, the problem is that didn't Jimmy, our friend, get tested? And he got tested negative.
Yeah.
But then I hear from Dr. Aldous that there's a lot of improper testing. Like, for example, he was watching somebody on one of the TV stations perform this test, and he was looking at it, and he says, that's not the way to perform the test.
Oh, no.
Right? You know, in other words, they were striking just inside the nose rather than you're supposed to go back and tickle your brain, he says, you know, if you want to get the virus, this virus anyway. And so, I mean, he was speculating on, well, how much, you know, what's the error rate here? We're in the testing. So
how close are we to starting?
Four minutes? You got 4 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. You think Mike's going to come on?
Yeah. He called me. Hey, he got unemployment.
Oh, great.
Patients got unemployment, I mean.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's the processing has been forever, right? Because the resources at the what do they call it? The what's the name of the unemployment center?
Workforce West Virginia.
Workforce West Virginia, right? Was overwhelmed.
Oh yeah.
And my nephew finally got through after, you know, 300 to 500 calls to the he's in Maryland. He finally got through. I mean, they were whacked too. So,
30 million unemployed, is that the figure?
I think so. I think it's going to that. It's who knows how big it's going to be. And plus, you now are going to have you know, problems with the statistic because who is just laid off and who is leaving the workforce. Both numbers are probably going to be bad. Okay, but if you the officially unemployed doesn't include, you know, people who gave up and after they made 200 calls and said hell with it, I'm never going to get it, and went on to, you know, the informal economy.
Well, to get back on our other subject here, why did Matt choose to come on at 9:30?
I said that he could come on whenever he wanted to, but I would sort of I encouraged him at 9:30 because I didn't know whether I just asked him, does he want to run into Kathy's? Are they going to have they're potentially are going to be competing with each other at some point.
Well, here he is. He's coming on now.
Well, he can be on. I said he can come on. It's just he probably wants to hear what she's going to say. That's probably what.
Well, they're both fantastic guests, and we're lucky to have them.
Well, thank you for reaching out there, pal. Okay.
Well, I tell you, when I put out the invitation, I've never gotten a no. Never gotten a no. Not one no, ever.
Well, we're in this new territory of Zoom broadcasting, right? So,
I hope that continues. I don't know. I mean, this labor call that we have every week is just incredible, John. I don't know why you're not getting on that.
Well, I'll get on the next one. When's the next one?
Next Wednesday. Every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. I mean,
all right. Yeah.
And we, you know who we had on this week?
Well, who?
Sarah Nelson.
Mm. Wow.
Sarah Nelson. And she is she should have Trumka's job.
Well.
I'm not kidding.
Is she running for it?
No, but I mean, she's wanting to fight the good fight with her union, but I think her knowledge far surpasses that position. You know, she's, she could go much higher.
She's with the stewardesses union, right?
Yeah, she is golden to me. She is golden.
I don't know why my video just went off, but okay. All right, we're at 9 o'clock. So Mike will come on in a minute, and then he usually does our intro. But this is the my name is John Case, and my buddy for years on the radio with John Christensen, and we used to do the Labor Beat Show. And now we're calling it Talking Socialism because I figure no matter what happens out of this whole mess, you're going to have a little more socialism. I don't know how much, but you're going to have more. And because I don't think the market economy is going to be able to, I mean, I'm not sure it's going to be able to recover, you know, without, you know, a tremendous amount of assistance, actually. We're in an environment not unlike, in some respects, you know, the terrible one of the 1930s. And it just, you know, once things pancake, they don't come back that easily. so that was the motivation for the show. And anyway, we're happy to, here comes Mike. Mike Diesel, our also longtime collaborator here, and he has a something's wrong with his camera because it looks like, you know, the passport, a photograph I saw, the passport of Adolf Eichmann one time when he was captured in Argentina. But anyway, but he's behind the yellow haze, and I see that Dr. Hahn is also on now, and I like the bandana. I mean the scarf bandana, that's looking cool.
I'm never going back.
Okay, so let's get started here, and I'll ask the first question to Kathy Kunkel, who is you're running. I think both of you are running for Congress from different parties for Alex Mooney's seat, right? I'm correct about that, right?
Correct.
And also, you know, I had a dream about him about 3 or 4 weeks ago, where he was standing arm in arm with Batista in Cuba, but. I think that has to do with his relatives. You know, I'd read about it, but anyway, I had actually a dream about that. But anyway, I'm glad that both of you. I wish that we had, an uprising. I hope we get an uprising out of it to do something about that guy because he's not a serious person in my point of view. But Kathy Kunkel, what is it like campaigning for Congress in the era of the pandemic and where we have to go through these, Zooming sessions and social media? Tell me how you're doing it, okay?
Yeah, well, it's certainly a challenge. I can't deny that. Not something, obviously, that any of us had anticipated. I'm lucky to be running as part of West Virginia Can't Wait, which is a group of more than 90 candidates running for various offices up and down the ballot who have pledged to not take corporate money in our campaigns. And so that's given me a bit of a network of other candidates to work with. So we've been doing joint Facebook Live town halls with other candidates running for other offices in the district, like House of Delegates or School Board. We've been doing some joint outreach, getting volunteers to write postcards and make phone calls on behalf of the campaign. But one thing that I also think is really an important role for our campaign right now is really trying to be there as a resource for people who are trying to understand what's going on federally and what kind of assistance is available. So we've had a couple of town halls around the Small Business Paycheck Protection Program. We're doing one next week to try to answer people's questions around the pandemic unemployment insurance. And so, you know, trying to also, you know, as I would if I were a congressman or a congresswoman, try to be a resource for people as well.
I remember as the Labor Council, we tried to visit Representative Mooney at various times, but we were never able to actually meet him. He kept putting, some person that looked like they had just graduated from high school in front of us to talk to us. And so I don't know of any constituent service that the guy engages in at all. And I my understanding is from the House of Representatives, I learned this from a speech by Senator Byrd a long time ago, that the essence of being a congressperson is constituent service. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, sort of both parts of what you said. It's a common complaint that I've heard throughout the district as we've met with, you know, various organizations and individuals. And I don't think I've run into anyone who's had a particularly satisfactory experience with Alex Mooney's office. And I do think, you know, your congressperson is your liaison to the federal government, or should be, you know, in terms of both, you know, helping individuals with whatever hurdles they may be running into with the, you know, VA or Social Security or what have you. But also, you know, there's a lot of really innovative local economic development ideas that I've run into throughout the 2nd Congressional District, and, you know, helping those folks know what kind of federal funds might be available to support good local projects is, I think, a key role of a congressperson.
What kind of projects do you have in mind? What do you favor? I mean, yeah, you must be excited about some of them. So what are they?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess one that is particularly exciting to me just because of the desperate need for rural broadband across the district. There's a group called the Roane Calhoun Clay Broadband Development Council, which is obviously in Roane Calhoun and Clay counties, but it's an initiative to create a locally owned broadband system there, recognizing that the Frontier monopoly has basically failed them in terms of building out the infrastructure that's needed, and wanting to have local control over that infrastructure. And so, you know, it's really exciting to see that kind of, you know, bottom up people trying to solve the local problem. And, you know, obviously that could really, you know, benefit from stronger action at the state and federal level to help facilitate those kinds of things.
My understanding is one of the problems is the Frontier's infrastructure, which is mostly landline infrastructure, actually, is just losing tons of money. And it takes a tremendous amount of investment to maintain, okay, a lot of money to maintain, and people just aren't using it the way they were. And so they're in one of the, I think they're almost bankrupt, aren't they? I mean, haven't they filed?
They are bankrupt.
They are
in bankruptcy, yes.
And the problem is, I understand that they were looking at some big player who wanted to, you know, take over infrastructure in West Virginia, like Facebook, for example, to buy it, but they don't want to buy it either because they don't know that, you know, that this whole landline infrastructure becomes, it may be a, you know, just one of those holes you pour money into, you know, forever, and, you know, it doesn't really do anything. So what
I suggested that they change their name to Buffering 5 years ago.
Buffering Inc. It's hard to imagine infrastructure for broadband is expensive, and you know, it's is there a model that you see around the country where you could follow that would be good for West Virginia?
Yeah, I mean, actually, right here in West Virginia, HardiNet is a pretty good model. It's a rural telephone cooperative that started in the 50s and got into broadband about a decade ago, and got some federal grants to build out broadband infrastructure in Hardy County. So, you know, connectivity in Hardy County is a lot better than in most of the other rural counties that I've been in the state. And, you know, to me, it's a good analogy to rural electrification in the 30s. I mean, in the 30s, when we were trying to electrify the country, it was not profitable for the private electric companies to go into these, you know, rural areas and string miles of electrical line. And so, you know, most rural parts of the country are served by rural electric co-ops that are supported by, you know, federal money because of the recognition that electricity was a fundamental utility that everyone should have access to in the 20th century. And I think we're seeing that now with broadband, and especially during this pandemic, you know, telehealth, education, small business, online sales, like that could all be a lot better, obviously, if we had decent internet in many parts of the state.
We're approaching, like I think someone mentioned before the show, 30 million, we're probably over actually 30 million unemployed right now. And I listen to Bloomberg nearly every day, not his business program, you know, I listen to that. And then I listen to all these investment people and experts and different companies, they're not optimistic at all. I mean, really, the only people that are optimistic are the people that work directly for Trump. And everybody else is looking at, they hope, a U-shaped recovery. But regardless, we have a long time in front of us with huge numbers of unemployed. And I've heard two different solutions on the sort of left-wing side of the. One is universal basic income, which I believe candidate Yang supported, although I think he was mainly pushing the. Having been in the high-tech industry, I know that they do have an actual apprehension about the number of jobs that artificial intelligence may in the end get rid of. And so there was some motivation in that industry there for support for this universal basic income is one approach, because people need cash. You know, they can't stay in their homes. No cash, people are going to come out of their homes, okay? The other is massive public works programs, like implied in the Green New Deal that Sanders was pushing, and I, you know, where you can just find ways to for the government to make up the difference, at least during the Depression part of this thing, of just hiring all these folks to do something useful to try and make the difference. Do you support one of those kind of approaches, or do you have something else in mind?
I mean, I think at least in the short term, we need to be providing people with more of a universal basic income model. I mean, you know, we had obviously this effort to get people $1,200 as a one-time thing. But, you know, for people who are facing monthly rent payments and are unable to work, that's clearly not going to cut it. So, you know, I feel like for the duration of this crisis, at least having monthly payments to folks is what is really needed to make folks, you know, economically secure in being able to stay home. Because, you know, right now we're saying, you know, that people, you know, are safer at home, but if you can't afford your food and rent, that's obviously not a sustainable solution. But going forward and talking about the actual, you know, on the other side of this, obviously, as you said, it's still going to be in a pretty severe economic depression. And I do think a massive public works program would be great, especially here in West Virginia, where we've needed something like that anyway. I mean, you know, we have billions of dollars of infrastructure needs in this state, water and wastewater infrastructure, transportation. We have billions of dollars of work to do in environmental reclamation, you know, mine reclamation, plugging abandoned oil and gas wells. And, you know, to me, that work is all pretty essential in terms of, you know, moving our state forward and having a firm foundation to attract other businesses and attract people to come move back to our state. So
my last question, I'll hand it off to my colleagues here, is that West Virginia's political economy has been based on natural resources for, you know, a long time. There are not many rich people in the state. I think the governor is the only billionaire, and our workforce is suffering under not the best education system in the country. In order to prepare itself for doing, for example, you know, Google is not likely to set up a headquarters and pay people six-figure salaries for skills that they don't have yet in the state. What's your idea of economic development? What role do you see the existing natural resources play, and what are your alternatives to it that you're thinking about in terms of the state changing its political economy?
Yeah, so I mean, as you said, for decades our state has been dominated by this extractive economy, and that's, you know, we've delivered a tremendous amount of wealth, mostly to out-of-state corporations, and that's, you know, built up very little in terms of lasting wealth and prosperity in the state. And you know, you just alluded to that, you know, the underfunding of our public education system and underfunding of PEIA and everything else. So those industries are weak financially right now. I mean, the coal industry has been collapsing financially for the last decade. The natural gas industry is on a pretty unstable financial footing. It's been, you know, propped up by a lot of Wall Street investment over the last decade, but really, you know, has not been nearly as profitable as the initial backers had hoped. So, you know, that I have real questions about how long that production boom is going to continue. But so I think there's a lot of reasons why we need to look at diversifying our economy here in West Virginia. And, you know, I do think that federal infrastructure investment has got to be a part of that, because, you know, we're not going to attract companies or people to live in places that can't guarantee safe drinking water to their residents. I mean, we saw the economic impacts here in Charleston in 2014 when we had the chemical spill, and we had small businesses that shut down that never reopened. We had people who left who haven't come back. So that really is critical to economic development. I think we could be doing a lot more with agriculture here in West Virginia as well. I think one thing this pandemic has taught us is the value of more local supply chains. We could be supporting aggregators and food hubs and more local processing to help farmers access local markets. And, you know, I think clean energy manufacturing, pharmaceutical manufacturing are all things that that we could do here in West Virginia that would be a change from our previous extractive economy.
Mike and JB, you got questions for or comments on for Kathy?
Well, let me just see if JB, I'll tip my hat to the senior member here. Mr. Christensen, do you have anything? He's on mute.
Are you on mute?
There you go. Now yeah. You're not.
I'm very happy to have Dr. Hahn and Kathy on the show. They have shown an example to the rest of the country that two candidates from opposite parties could actually come together and raise some money to combat this event that we're going through. How did that get started? How did you guys contact each other and realize that you had a common interest?
Well, it's actually funny. We were both on a radio show together, somewhat like this.
There you go.
Yeah, it was WTSQ, which is a local radio station here in Charleston. Dr. Hahn called in and I was in the studio. But yeah, it came out that we were both into running. I think obviously all of us are also not in favor of there being hungry children here in West Virginia and, you know, trying to figure out how we can be helpful during the current crisis. I was actually a couple of days ago helping to unload trucks for a food bank here in Charleston. But Dr. Hahn approached me a few weeks ago and challenged me to this run to benefit the Boys and Girls Club of the Eastern Panhandle, which has been, like so many other agencies, going above and beyond to help feed kids during this pandemic.
Well, that's great, Dr. Hahn. So you've been in touch with Stacy. Stacy Roan in Martinsburg, or who was your contact with the Boys and Girls Club?
Yeah, Stacy Roan is our contact, and she's great. She's doing fantastic work throughout the Eastern Panhandle, and it turns out that because kids are home from school with the pandemic outbreak, that they are providing three times the normal number of meals to kids, dinners and snacks, five a week per kid. So three times the normal number. And so it seemed like a great project that we could work on together. My campaign is Together We Stand. And it's based on the notion that the biggest problem that we have in this country is the division that is, you know, so dominating our society and politics that we have solutions to every problem. I'm a family physician, and, you know, we have a completely new paradigm of being able to treat patients with the things that we know today. Even, you know, I've been a physician for 20 years, and just in those 20 years, there are so many developments And the question, though, is how come we can't change healthcare? How come, you know, we are stuck essentially in a 20th century healthcare system that just doesn't work at all? And it's because we don't work together. And, you know, the basic notion that if rather than having two parties that essentially exist to beat one another, if rather than that, we had leaders, parties, whatever, that are committed to finding solutions to the nation's problems, we could do anything we put our minds to. Just the fact that we're all communicating on Zoom, you know, it's just such a magnificent breakthrough. And it points to the fact that as a species, we're capable of unbelievable things. And yet, really, we're stuck in this country. We're stuck fighting one another over 20th century issues, and nothing is taking place. The pandemic is a wonderful example that, you know, we're incapable to rise to this challenge. And so that's really what my campaign is about. And you know, Kathy is running as the Democrat. I'm running as a Republican, but I everything that Kathy says, I think is great. And maybe we have different ideas about how to solve issues. But I disagree with the notion that I'm here to tear her down or to beat her. We're both here to try to solve issues. And so this race is kind of the, you know, a perfect way to express, you know, the notion of my campaign. Together we stand.
Boy, that's so refreshing. I'm so happy to hear that. We have, I announced earlier, we're going to get, finally, we're going to get free testing Berkeley today and tomorrow at the high school. I think there's several other locations.
There's a church, over in Charlestown, JB. I think that United Methodist Church is doing testing today.
Right. There's several locations in the Eastern Panhandle. And that's, this is 2 months in. We're 2 months in and we're finally getting free testing. I mean, this is outrageous. Alex Mooney, where the heck is he? He's nowhere. I have not heard a word from him in 2 months.
He's eating a Cuban sandwich.
Well, I mean, what do you guys think about that? The absence of our leader. He's our local representative to Congress. We have not heard a word from him.
I mean, that's, you know, before the pandemic, the approach I was taking to campaigning was going door to door throughout the district. And you know, that's just a common theme that people told me all over the second district. He's been in office 8 years and we just met you first. I think that's a part of it to think that our role as members of Congress is to be in the community. You know, as a physician, as a small town family physician, I'm embedded in my small community. And we've always viewed our role as not just sitting here in the office and taking care of patients. We do a lot of that, but we do house calls. We get involved in community lifestyle improvement programs. It's a philosophy I call being there, and it's, you know, it's what's always motivated my work as a physician, and it's what would motivate my work as a member of Congress. So yeah, you want to have the sense that when you're in a struggle, when you're in a challenge, that your leaders are there with you. And, you know, back to my first point that our current system, which essentially just butts heads, you know, issues are weapons to be used against one another. It meant that we didn't respond to this pandemic. As you mentioned, you know, testing is finally here. I think everybody is aware at this point that if we were going to get out of this in some reasonable fashion, that it would involve systematic testing of not just sick people, but well people, that we would need some forms of protection, like personal protective equipment, and hygiene measures. And we need a plan to use those options. You know, the lockdown should have been a very temporary response to, you know, a very uncertain and very fast moving situation back in February and March. But we haven't responded beyond the lockdown, and now people are stuck in you know, these two divided camps, where it's either, you know, I either value my life or my livelihood. And I think there are a lot of other choices. And we are not enacting a rational plan that would get people out of that paradigm. And it's, you know, it's horrible to watch, and it's unsafe for us both from a health perspective and for our economy. And it's a shame. It's demoralizing when we're all going through this to watch our leaders fight one another. The animosity is not good for national mental health, or you know, our pride as a nation is hurt. It's a very painful thing to watch. There are all sorts of things we could have done and we could be doing today, in terms of the pandemic, in terms of economic development, in terms of healthcare. And we just need a whole new style of leadership to get there.
That's true. Kathy, what are you hearing on the campaign trail as far as Alex Mooney? I mean, has anybody seen the guy?
Really, no. And I mean, what is? No. And what was particularly surprising to me was the number of elected officials I've met, you know, mayors or county commissioners, who also have not seen him, which particularly shocked me, because, I mean, how hard is it as a representative to introduce yourself to every county commissioner in the district? Is not that difficult. And it's very frustrating, because I think it's sort of lowered people's expectations of what a congressperson could be. And, you know, I think, you know, he's sort of almost out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people. Whereas really, you know, and especially obviously in a crisis situation, a congressperson could be doing a lot, and could be, you know, bringing resources in the district, could be reaching out to constituents during this time to try to explain resources and everything else.
Yeah, we don't hear anything. We haven't heard a thing. And the last time we heard about him nationally was when he broke into that meeting.
Skiff room.
In the basement of the Capitol.
That's a skiff room. It wasn't just a meeting. It was a skiff room. And what he did was illegal.
Yeah, it was illegal. And he
brought a cell phone in.
Why wasn't he arrested for that?
I have no idea.
Well, we could ask why. A lot of people haven't.
Let me just say good morning. Mike Diesel Cuccarini here. Kathy, my wife, says hello, and she loves you.
Everybody loves Kathy.
Patience, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Kathy, yes, yes.
Says hello. And Doc, I got to tell you, Dr. Hahn, my favorite Republican used to be Steve Schmidt. I think it might be you now. I'm not really sure.
What an honor.
You put complete sentences together. They really were meaningful and intelligent and kind and courteous and respectful. And I just don't, my head's blown. I don't know how to respond to that. And, but I thank you all. One of the things, and I'm going to make this personal for a second, if John and JB don't mind. John, is it okay if I give them a little bit of medical history?
Yeah, so you may be, as long as you feel you can let this information out, and all the scoundrels in the world can. Okay.
That cat's been out of the bag for a while. About, I guess, 2.5 years ago, I had a double surgery. I had my gallbladder removed, and I had a hernia fixed at the same time. About 4 months later, I had a stroke, and I had to rehab from that. And that was scary and difficult. But then I have a chronically torn abdominal muscle that just is going to eventually require surgery, and then I have a herniated disc in my neck that is eventually going to require surgery. All of these things took place in the course of 8 to 9 months. And a lot of people encouraged me to apply for SSDI because, I mean, I'm still, you know, you can look at the package and think, wow, that's a sexy man. But here's the thing.
I was just thinking that.
But the point being is I had tried to apply for SSDI, but being a private contractor as a stand-up comic for 30 years, I didn't put a lot of money in. Now, prior to that, I had worked as a professional contractor for the government in management information systems and so on and so forth. So I did in that career, I did put money in. But I guess my question would be, I've been turned down for SSDI twice. Do I just keep applying?
That's your question?
That's it. That's his question.
In the current system, yes. I mean, the other thing I could offer you is, you know, for $5 and a bottle of bourbon, you know, I'll do your surgery for you. It won't be good, but, you know.
Listen, it's got to be the right bourbon.
Oh, boy.
We can negotiate that. And that's healthcare today, you know, unfortunately. Yeah. One of the things that got me political, I used to be, you know, medicine was supposed to be above the baser things like politics and money. But, you know, I started seeing people who literally were doing their own surgeries, you know, people that had skin abscesses and were opening them up themselves. And I started to see, you know, it really was unbelievable that we've solved all these incredible medical issues, and yet people can't get into a surgeon to have an abscess drained properly. Right. And we have all these answers for you, and yet you can't get them. It's, you know, it's more mind blowing than anything that we've got such incredible treatments available to you, and yet we have figured out how to deny them to you. You know, really the big issue in human history has been scarcity throughout, you know, through the ages. 100 years ago, you know, Mike, you had that gallbladder issue. It was, you know, sorry about your luck. You know, we can't help you. Right. And we've developed, you know, it's a walk in the park.
I mean, that was not that difficult.
And a lot of these things are, you know, a walk in the park, and yet you can't get to them. And that's the remarkable thing. And it's because we are unable to change anything in this nation with the current paradigm, where in Washington, two parties just butt heads, Representative Mooney, when he sees the initial stimulus package for the pandemic, he says, I won't vote for that because it was designed by a Democrat, you know, where that's how we deal with our problems. We get nothing done. You can't get your health care. We can't fix a pandemic. We've got to try something different. We need new leaders,
right?
And we need a new approach.
Right. Just to follow on, I still have what's called tremors, residual tremors from the initial stroke. They don't happen as much as they used to, but my right eye begins to spasm. And my eyelid starts to close, and my shoulder.
Who's your doctor?
I have a neurologist from Winchester, and I had it was recommended the first week they recommended pretty intense speech therapy, and about that day when we were getting ready to set it up, my wife was shocked because I began to speak normally. The first week or so was nothing but, you can ask JB and John, when I spoke to them, it was nothing but stammering and stuttering. I couldn't talk well. I had, and my neurologist said that's just going to be there for probably the next 2 or 3 years.
I feel like I need to do a Zoom medical consult for you, Mike.
Yeah,
By the way, Mike, you know, he, in the middle of that, you know, he did perform two or three times at the Ale House there in Charlestown.
Yeah, I still did stand up.
And, you know, he brought the house down, you know, even with a couple of stutters, you know. So I'm just telling you, though, he, you know, he didn't lose all of his skills. I'm going to, Dr. Hahn, you know, I'm interested in what kind of conversations you're having with Republicans. And I, you know, I listened to Joe Biden, I think he said this about 6 months ago, how he had friends on the other side of the aisle that he felt that if there was a different environment, you know, that there would be not every, there were people that wanted to vote against Trump, but they were waiting for, you know, the polls in their state to head down below 25%, which if half the companies country is Republican and half is Democrat, that 25%, that's like the borderline. Now, when Nixon's popularity fell to 23 at the height of the, you know, problems in the Nixon administration, there were a lot of defections from the Republican Party at that point, okay? But there's this mathematical problem, right, that happens. But I'm not sure that just that's just on the calculating level, okay? Someone who is just calculating, you know, the constituencies and the votes and whatever. But, you know, we have a moral problem now that is so depraved that, you know, when I listen to, for example, Lindsey Graham, okay, who I used to think was, you know, not the worst guy around, okay? But when I see someone who looks like he's just been, you know, someone cashed a check and they got him, you know, in the sack. And that part, that level of corruption, I just wonder if anybody can come back from that. You know, once you sort of walk down that path, I mean, how far can you go before you're not recoverable? And who, Republicans you're talking to, what are you hearing from them? And what do you think the balance there is?
You know, that's the big question is what's the balance? Because I've been very, very lucky as a family physician in this area. You know, I take care of people from all walks of life, and lots of my patients are conservative Republicans. But we've gotten to know one another as human beings over the years. And over the years, we've started talking more about the politics of healthcare and then politics in general. And really, people are united in saying they are sick of the fighting. They are sick of the political situation. They're sick of nothing getting done. That's the number one thing I hear. And it's one of the things that motivated me to run. But when you go online, you know, on social media and try to communicate with people, you really get this, you know, this almost monolithic negative conversation. It's you, you know, how do you feel about guns, gays, abortion, immigrants?
Right.
And it's a very difficult, you know, it's very difficult to talk about those issues. And I think that I hope that we have a silent majority of people that really want to see things come together in a different way. And what we're really hearing more of is the very vocal minority. But it's, you're absolutely right. You know, why are we fighting over all these issues and ignoring the fact that our leadership is dominated by corruption, by obvious dishonesty, by indecency, by immorality? And we have big companies that clearly value their shareholders over human life. We have media corporations that, you know, slant the truth in whatever direction that suits them. Those are the real issues. Whether or not we can get to them through all the din, through all the rhetoric, is a great question. But in talking to real people all day long in my office, whose backgrounds are very different from my background, we have a lot of common ground. And you know, people just want to see things work in this country, and they're disgusted by what's going on. Whether or not we can change it is the big question, and that's the question of my campaign: is there a way to break through?
How about you, Kathy Kunkel? I mean, you've been talking. Are you talking to any Republicans in your conversations? Or I know people. I mean, the tendency is to go gather your rosebuds in your party. You know, but I understand that. But nonetheless, you don't have a primary opponent, do you?
I don't have a primary opponent. Okay. And I've certainly talked to some Republicans on the campaign trail, some of whom are quite frustrated with Alex Mooney due to what we were talking about before, you know, his lack of constituent services and failure to show up in the district and this sort of reality that he is really kind of bought and paid for by interests outside of the state that, you know, make it sort of relatively unnecessary for him to campaign in a real way in the district. But, you know, I think we often like have this model in our head of the electorate where it's like, well, 40% of the people are here as Democrats and 40% of the people are here as Republicans and 20% of people are in the middle and we have to like fight over those people in the middle. And the reality in the second congressional district is that more than half of the people of the voting age population didn't vote in the 2016 election. So there is, as Dr. Hahn said, there are an overwhelming number of people who think that the system is rigged or corrupt and it is not for them. And they've just kind of given up on politics. And those are the people that we're really trying to reach in this campaign. And one thing that I appreciate about Dr. Hahn is that he too has taken a pledge to not take corporate money in his campaign. And I think that, you know, the level of money in politics is really corrosive to our democracy right now. And this leads to having these political folks in DC who are really out of touch with their constituents and really not looking out for the interests of people in the district.
Yeah, I think the like Mike just said in his message, right? I mean, I think Mr. Mooney is one of the ALEC funded American Legislative Executive Council, right? Schemes of the Koch brothers, I know from it was interesting. I used to partner with Elliot Simon until we couldn't stand each other anymore. On a radio program. Well, we kept retracing the same argument over and over again, and it never went anywhere, you know. So even though I liked the guy personally, but I remember he was telling me when he was running against John Doyle for state rep or delegate here in whatever the Shepherdstown Harpers Ferry district number is, 67. He said that he didn't get a dime from the Koch brothers. I said, really? You know, I mean, you're pushing the libertarian line. They love that kind of stuff. You know, why not? He says, oh, they spent a lot of money. He says they spent a ton of money attacking Doyle, my opponent, but they never showed me a single one of the flyers or the bills. I was like, not connect. You know, I had no say whatsoever in what they were doing. I said, well, why did you take the money? And, you know, he always had an opportunist, you know, kind of response to that. But
because it was there.
Yeah, because it was there. Right. You know, whatever. I don't know how you get money out of politics. I could see you could have a society where everybody had closer to proportional amounts of money and therefore only proportional amounts of influence, I suppose. But I'm not sure how it can happen. I mean, every effort that I've seen, well, what efforts have succeeded in that thing when you have the level of inequality that you have in this country right now? And by the way, I want to ask each of you, by the way, whether you support collective bargaining for public employees in West Virginia. I'd like you to answer that question if you could.
I do.
Okay. So I'm not sure how reforms like that get done when interests are so powerful.
Well, you're right. You're right, John. And you know, it's one of the first issues that got me to politics was campaign finance. I've worked the healthcare angle for years and see no changes. And I do believe it's because of campaign finance. And I've gotten to the point that I think that the only way to fix things is to get new leadership. And that's why I decided to run. because it's just so frustrating to watch this every day, day in, day out, where there's this incredible disconnect between these issues and the needs of the citizenry in this country and what's taking place in Washington and in the corporate boardrooms. We've got to get at the fundamental issues that drive behavior in Washington, D.C., and conflict of interest with campaign finance money is we think it's the driving force or one of the great driving forces. And we have leadership that has essentially accepted this, you know, this immoral construct. I don't get it. And so we need new people that would come in there and say, look, there are basic standards of ethics and morals and decency that, you know, everything forms around. And you know, getting this obvious conflict of interest out of the way is one of the keys. But this group doesn't seem to care about it.
No.
Well, and I would also add to your original point, John, that the huge amount of inequality in this country is a fundamental barrier to a lot of things. But you know, as long as you know three families in our country have more wealth than half of the population, there's always going to be a wealthy few who are trying to use that insane level of wealth and power to influence elections or to write laws or you know what have you. And so you know, I think we can't really have campaign finance reform without also addressing the inequality in our country, which you know does mean more support for labor rights, means taxing corporations and the wealthy, and trying to create a more equal playing field, and you know breaking up large monopolies and going back to the days of antitrust and everything else. So. There's a lot bound up in this, but you know, like Dr. Han said, unless we have good people running who are willing to take those fights on, it's hard to see how we get anywhere with it.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation not long ago with a former professor of my wife. My wife's a professional economist, but one of her professors, who was a Republican, moderate Republican, at University of Delaware, and I remember talking to him about. Should these large, you know, virtual monopolies, you know, be broken up, okay, and under the antitrust kind of formula, right? and he said, well, you know, some of them probably should, okay, but he said some of them, you know, for example, everyone thought that IBM should for years should have been broken up, okay? But actually, you didn't have to because Microsoft did break it up in a very big way, okay? Stole about, you know, $30 billion worth of business from it. And it was never quite as dominant as it was before. And then you have companies like Amazon, for example, or and then people say, well, we should break up Amazon. Although, I'm not quite sure what everybody gains from two Amazons, you know, but... he had an interesting idea. He said, it's more appropriate, he says, if you want to affect, right, the public obligations, the public responsibility, which any really Delaware corporation is supposed to affirm, right, we're saying limited liability is good for innovation, for invention, for economic development. That was the whole foundation of the right, the corporation, right, that you have to pay your debts, but everybody that invested in you doesn't get sued if you kill somebody, okay, by accident or whatever, all right, and that it'd be better to put to it for the public, like in some other countries, where you put get a stake in the too big to fail company. And where, you know, like, for example, Germany, you know, you have other, you know, the way the boards of directors and corporations in Germany are set up, you know, it works out that German CEOs make barely a third of what U.S. CEOs make, okay? Plus, there's employees on the boards of the bigger companies. And if you are, in fact, too big to fail and your risk proposition goes south somewhere, and the public is going to bail you out because you are too big to fail. You know, the services you're providing are essential services, in effect. then the public should have a stake in that corporation. Now, that creates other issues, but I'm kind of wondering whether or not that is not a better direction, because scale is a big deal. You know, we have, you know, we have a company that can produce a trillion widgets. Do we really need another widget maker at some level? Maybe not. Okay, maybe, but if the widget maker takes owner takes his money and decides to buy the Republican Party with it, and you know, do damage to the public, to the public interest in some way, well then, and then fails and then wants, you know, wants the money to do the same thing again, well, you know, I think you got a right to say no to that, and to do what some of the Northern European countries have done, Denmark in particular. Where, you know, or Finland, a great stake, where they turn their oil wealth right into a sovereign wealth fund that then became the foundation of the best educational system in the world, by some accounts, okay? So in thinking about, I'm thinking about particularly of West Virginia, okay? Because we have the only wealth we have in the state besides the human capital, which is in trouble, is what's in the ground. You know, that's the wealth. It's like maybe a dirty oil thing, but it's cash. It's gold. There's a certain amount of it. And, you know, you can sort of be Finland or you can be Libya. I mean, the way that you approach these things. But the most important thing is the public has to gain the stake in that interest sufficient to be able to do the diversification or to do the investments that you need. And I'm not sure that just breaking things up all the time is the way to do that. I get your reaction to, you know, to how do you suppose you're governor of West Virginia or you're and all the Congress get together and you're trying to get a federal state plan as to fix the state, and you say, okay, the first thing is, you know, we have to, you know, renegotiate the entire contracts with the fossil fuel industry and find out what happens to that money, or shut it down. And if we just shut it all down, as some of the environmental interests want to do, well, then, you know, where's the money to invest in anything? How do you deal with this paradox?
John, what you're pointing out is that we have these really complicated issues. I just refer to them as we have the 21st century and we haven't gotten out of the 20th century. You know, we have an old model in place and there are all sorts of things we could do, but it is complicated. It may take some experimentation. And we have to be working together. We have to be talking. We have to be able to talk to economists and industrialists, and you know, be open to some new approaches. When we founded this nation, it was founded on a very delicate balance between federal and state, between government and individual, and at certain points between the power of corporations and the need for competition in the marketplace. And so there were all these competing factors, and we have so many things that have changed in the last 30 to 50 years, but because we have this very simplistic leadership style where it's essentially, you know, one party beating the other, and we have these special interests that have all of the power and are controlling what's going on with our elected leaders, we don't have these conversations. We don't think about the things that you just talked about. We don't try new things. We have these very, very limited ideas, and clearly they're not working. And so it's, you know, within everything that's happening, we all have to be working together, optimizing our knowledge, our technology, our economy, everything. And as I say, if we were working together to solve these issues, if we can all be talking on Zoom, then there's so many things that are different and are better that we could be bringing to these issues of economic development, of income, healthcare, but we're not doing it. We're just not having these conversations at the levels that they need to take place. And that is the problem. You know, anything that you mentioned might work if we were able to actually try it, but we're not.
Gotcha. Anybody else?
Tax the hell out of the 1%. That's all I'm saying.
Thanks, Marty.
Hey, I have to get to patient care here. I
know. We're at the end of our show. We're at 9:54. You want to, JB, you got anything you want to close us out?
Yeah, yes. I just want to thank Matt and Kathy for coming on the show and sharing their ideas with our listeners. And Mike Diesel doing his little Bernie impression, which we could do a whole show on that. We used to in the old days when Bernie was running several years ago. He was a regular on our show, and I think he does a great impersonation of.
Oh, he's got Bernie. One of the best Bernie impressions. Yeah,
definitely. Right.
Thank you.
And Kathy and Matt.
It's better than my character, the governor, our current governor.
Oh, yeah,
I know.
Jay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Wish you both luck in the campaign, and look forward to seeing you wherever you can get Alex Mooney in the room, so we can see close up and personal the differences between you guys. But like we said earlier, he doesn't show up. He is nowhere. If you could emphasize that more in your campaign, I think it would be a winner.
Where is he?
It would help both of you.
Where is Alex?
Where's Alex? Where is he?
Yeah, Kathy and Dr. Hunt, I thank you so much. Good luck. Continue to do what you're doing. It's incredibly respectful and refreshing. Dr. Hahn, thank you for becoming my new favorite Republican, even though you and I could probably disagree on a lot of things. There's a lot of things we can agree on, so thank you for that.
Especially your gallbladder.
Yeah. I mean, I think a good
It's in a trash heap somewhere, pal. I don't know where it's at.
A good conversation about that one. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining our program today. We're back here on Fridays at 9 o'clock each week, and you know, we have a we range from radical to moderate, you know, all the way. Take care, guys. Bye bye.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. All right.